So next case, Nicholson v. Pult Homes. Mr. Carfarelli.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel, Mr. Ward. Donna Nicholson was a 10-year employee of Pulte Homes at the time she was fired in 2009. And in a three-month span, she goes from being an excellent employee to being fired. 2009 actually started well for Donna Nicholson. She was one of the only associates for Pulte out of 47 to make any sales in the first quarter of the year. She received certificates of achievement in February and March. And in March, she receives her annual performance review, rating her to be an excellent sales associate. Her supervisor, Maria Wilhelm, calls her performance outstanding and world class. But later that month, the vice president of sales, Chris Natz, first finds out that Donna Nicholson is struggling with her elderly, sick parents that she needs to take care of. And soon after that, he puts her on a performance improvement plan. Just one day after she requests time off to take her father to see his oncologist. And 3 months later, Donna Nicholson is fired for poor performance. On the very same day that she calls her supervisor and asks her for time to go deal with her mother's health issues at the hospital. So the question is, what happened between March of 2009, when Donna Nicholson was an excellent employee, to June of 2009, to the point where she got fired? Now, the district court in this case focused on the notice issue as the basis for summary judgment.
Is it permissible for a company to say that you have to, if you want FMLA relief, you have to go to the human resources office?
It is permissible for the company to say that.
Which they do in their employee handbook.
They do say that in their employee handbook. However, they also have a separate leave policy, which is for daily personal type leaves, which says that if you want to take a day off, for example, to take your father to the hospital or to the doctor, all you have to do is ask your supervisor. Now, just because the company doesn't want to take those types of leaves and call them FMLA leaves doesn't mean that they're not protected by the FMLA. And I think that's the key issue here, is that she took these days off to take her father to the doctor, to take her mother to the hospital, to go back to the hospital to deal with her mother's care. And the company never called it FMLA leave. And she didn't have to call it FMLA leave under their own policies. But the FMLA clearly encompasses these types of activities. And that's why we believe this is an FMLA violation. But the case law and the regulations...
I don't understand that. If a company says, you know, if you want FMLA leave, you have to go to the human resources office, are the middle managers permitted to waive that policy?
No, they're not permitted to waive that policy, but I believe the middle managers have to let the employees know. The middle managers are the eyes and ears of the company. And there are a string of cases in the circuit, Burnett, Abu Shan. Burnett is almost identical to this case, where an employee starts to explain to his or her supervisors that his or her parents are going through these medical issues, it's affecting their work. And the Seventh Circuit in Burnett said, well, that triggers a duty on behalf of the company to say, okay, you may qualify for FMLA. Now, our position is that when Donna Nicholson, starting in December of 2008, explains to her supervisor, Maria Wilhelm, that her father is suffering from cancer, which progresses to stage 3, she may need to take time off for chemotherapy, that triggered a duty in Maria Wilhelm to say, okay, what you're saying to me sounds like it may qualify you for FMLA leave, go to human resources. Now, if that had happened and Donna Nicholson then didn't go to human resources and time that she's out of work dealing with her father's issues was used against her, we would be talking about something completely different, Your Honor. But nobody ever told Donna Nicholson that everything that she was talking about with regard to her parents qualified her for FMLA leave. Instead, what happened was that She was told to work harder, and she had a conversation when she received her performance improvement plan from Maria Wilhelm in May. She specifically told Maria Wilhelm, this is almost an impossible plan for me to meet because you're asking me to come in and work additional hours that I simply can't do because I need to take care of my parents. And again, the word parents, take care of my parents, should have triggered a duty on Maria Wilhelm to say, well, if you can't meet the PIP, then you need to go to Human Resources and apply for FMLA leave, take your leave, come back in 3 months, and then try to fulfill your PIP.
She wasn't asking for leave, though.
She wasn't.
Anytime she asked for leave, she got it. And that, so her FMLA rights weren't interfered with here, and she wasn't fired for excessive absenteeism or for taking too much leave. She was fired for poor performance.
Well, that's what the company says, Your Honor, that she was fired for poor performance.
Well, there isn't any evidence to the contrary.
Actually, we believe that there is, Your Honor. First of all, as I said, she was an excellent employee as of March 2009. What they're saying is that she was fired for failing to meet her sales quotas in 2009, but Pulte had 47 sales associates, and 44 of the 47 sales associates failed to meet their sales quotas in 2009, and only two of those sales associates were terminated, Donna Nicholson and Juan Chaidez, who's Donna Nicholson's coworker, who started asking questions about Donna Nicholson after Donna Nicholson had been fired. So I believe that that's fine. If the company wants to have a policy that says you don't meet your sales quotas, you're going to be terminated, that's one story. But for the company to say that Donna Nicholson is fired for not meeting her sales quotas when she actually had more sales than most other sales associates by the time she went on her performance improvement plan, and 44 out of the 47 never even met their quota, is a whole different story. And the question is, what can a reasonable jury infer here? And the connection is she got the day off. She was allowed to go to the hospital, to take her mother to the hospital. But this is a situation like in the Loudermilk case where she calls her supervisor, Maria Wilhelm, on the day she's terminated and says, I need to take my mother to the hospital. And Maria Wilhelm says, wait, I'm in a meeting with Chris Natz. Maria Wilhelm shows up at the facility and says, you're fired, and doesn't provide any explanation. It's this immediate temporal proximity to what I consider to be the protected activity and the termination, which shows that there's pretext. We also have the testimony of Juan Chaidez, an impartial coworker, the only impartial witness that we had in this case, whose deposition was taken. He specifically asked Maria Wilhelm, the decision maker, why Donna Nicholson had been terminated after Donna Nicholson's termination, and she told him that, well, I can't say, but Donna's dealing with personal family issues that she needs to attend to. So she doesn't.
What would you expect him to say?
Well, she could say nothing, for example. But if Donna Nicholson's,
it would be natural to say, yeah, personal reasons. That's more polite than saying, well, she was fired for incompetence or not doing her job, right? I wouldn't attach any weight to that.
Well, she didn't say personal reasons, though, Your Honor. She said family matters, and she did talk about her father being sick. And so I think a reasonable jury can infer that if the decision maker is talking in the context of why Donna Nicholson was terminated about Donna Nicholson's father being sick.
That's very unrealistic. The point is you say something which is designed to be polite to the person who's left, right? It's much nicer to say, well, she left, she had to leave for family. She couldn't hold the job because of family reasons. Is a lot nicer than saying, well, she's rude to customers and she doesn't work hard enough and so on, and we're going down the drain, this company. So, no, I think that's...
Grant, and she didn't say she's rude to customers. But she could have said, look, it's for personal reasons we're not doing
it. How people react. Come on.
Well, finally...
It's not planning. What if someone asks me why Maria isn't here? What shall be my formula for protecting the company and protecting
right.
her feelings and this and that? No, I don't think that's realistic.
Well, finally, Your Honor, the last piece of evidence. Again, this is a summary judgment case. If a jury decides that, we're prepared to live with it. But the issue is what...
There's going to be a settlement, right?
Right. But the last piece of evidence here is that on the day, again, the day that Donna Nicholson said she needed to take her father, she needed to go back to the hospital for her mother, that's the day that she's fired. And it's prior to the expiration of her performance improvement plan. There were still 2 weeks left on her performance improvement plan. Now, if the company had a policy of terminating people halfway through their performance improvement plans, it would be one thing. But this was the only occasion that Pulte has ever terminated anybody on a performance improvement plan halfway through the plan, and there was no triggering event. It's not like she swore at her supervisor.
The policy was that performance improvement plans were half as long as hers was.
Right, but she had double the duties on her performance improvement plan, so it was doubly difficult. She had, instead of 1 month, she had 2 months, but she had to perform twice as many sales. So our position is that a jury could infer that to mean that they put double the burden on her, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Caffarelli. Mr. Ward?
May it please the Court, and I guess it qualifies as good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Christopher Ward on behalf of Appellees Pulte Home Corporation and Chris Natz. Your Honors, Nicholson's FMLA interference and retaliation claims both fail, and the District Court properly granted summary judgment for a very simple reason, and that reason is that there was no evidence that Ms. Nicholson provided appropriate notice to Pulte Homes, either that her parents did in fact suffer from a serious health condition requiring active care and or daily supervision with the basic necessities of life, and there was no notice from Ms. Nicholson that she wished to take such time off to provide that level of care. Furthermore, Your Honors, the evidence that was before the District Court, which the District Court specifically acknowledged viewing in the light most favorable to Ms. Nicholson multiple times in its opinion, was that no one at Pulte ever interfered with her request to take time off. Anytime she ever asked for time off, she was granted that time off, including just a day before she asked for it. This Court should therefore affirm.
It's pretty likely that the reason she was... Here's a company that's desperate, obviously, building houses in the midst of the collapse of the housing bubble. So they're desperate. They want everybody to be working, you know, a lot of overtime, working very hard, fully focused, and so on. And, you know, her family problems are a distraction, so they fire her.
And, Your Honor, I appreciate that that's counsel's position and it's Ms. Nicholson's position.
Did the jury find that?
Well, what the district court found is that there's no prima facie case, so there's no need to even consider whether there's a jury issue here.
That's about... What do you mean, no prima facie case?
Well, with respect to notice, Your Honors, and the federal regulations are very clear on this. In order for an employee to take leave under the FMLA, they must the parents or the family member's medical condition must be such that the individual is unable to provide or perform basic self-care in the areas of hygiene or nutrition. And this comes directly from 29 CFR 825.124, which then 29 CFR 825.800 modifies by stating needed to care, or it says incapable of self-care means that the individual requires, quote, active assistance or supervision to provide daily self-care. That was the necessary notice that Ms. Nicholson needed to provide in order to show that she was qualified and eligible to take FMLA under these circumstances. And the undisputed facts, which came exclusively from Ms. Nicholson's deposition testimony, by the way, Your Honors, show that she did not provide that level of information to anybody at Pulte Homes. With respect to her father, Ms. Nicholson testified that he lived by himself, that he cared for himself, he shopped for himself, he transported himself to medical appointments. In fact, the only care that Ms. Nicholson provided to him over a four-year period was to attend 5 doctor's appointments. That's it. That's nowhere close to showing that Ms. Nicholson's father, and I don't mean to sound cold-hearted, Your Honors, but that he was incapable of performing daily and basic self-care, because he simply wasn't. And the information that he provided, Your Honors, to the company was in December of 2008, Ms. Nicholson told Marie Wilhelm, I may need to take some unspecified time off in the future to attend doctor's appointments. That's it. Not to provide care for my father, not because he was incapable of caring for himself, but simply to attend doctor's appointments.
Well, that's a form of care, isn't it? I mean, if he's very decrepit and so on, maybe he can't go to the doctor by himself. Well, maybe he can't understand what the doctor would be telling him.
And it may or may not be, but the notice obligation of the employee is to give that level of information to the employer, as 29 CFR 825.800 makes clear.
Who's asking her for that level of information?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the question.
Who's asking her?
Well, she was only providing indications that her parents... She certainly didn't provide any indication, Your Honor, that her parents sought her father, at least.
Well, didn't say to her, well, you have to provide more information to human resources, right?
Well, what Ms. Wilhelm did say, Your Honors, was, absolutely, let me know what you need. So she certainly didn't interfere with her opportunity to take time off. And Ms. Nicholson was notified that she was required to go to the Human Resource Department. She was given a copy of the company's employee handbook. In fact, she testified at her deposition that she reviewed that handbook in 2009 while this was going on. So she was given notice of the requirements that were placed upon her to notify the proper people, and she simply failed to comply with them. Under this court's recent decision, just earlier this year in the Riggi case, an employee's failure to comply with the company's policies requiring notice to a specific person forecloses an FMLA claim. So that's where the prima facie case fails right there. The same is true with respect to Ms. Nicholson's mother. She provided but one instance of information regarding her mother before the company made the decision to terminate her employment, and that was in April of 2009. And all Ms. Nicholson said to Maria Wilhelm was, I'm taking my mother to doctor's appointments on my days off so that they don't interfere with my work. Again, there's no indication from that statement that her mother was incapable of basic daily self-care that Ms. Nicholson wanted or, in fact, even needed. She disclaimed an interest, in fact, in taking time off to attend to her mother. She said, I'm trying to do it on my days off so it does not interfere with my work. Okay? Under what the federal regulations require and under this court's precedent in the De La Rama case and the Stoops case, in order to provide appropriate notices, she must give at least some level of information to the employer that says, my family member has a serious medical condition that renders them incapable of self-care, and I either need or would like time off to attend to that. There has to be some iteration of that colloquy.
You didn't argue in your brief that she hadn't made a prima facie case.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, we argued in our brief that she had made one out?
You didn't argue that she hadn't made a prima. You didn't mention prima facie case.
If we didn't, Your Honor, it was certainly a...
No, your argument was different. Your argument was that she hadn't given them enough information.
That's correct, Your Honor. A notice is an element of the prima facie case, so her failure to provide appropriate notice...
You're arguing here from these regulations that she wasn't... that she couldn't have qualified for FMLA leave. But you didn't argue that in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think what we argued in the brief was that, and as the district court fully recognized after its careful review of the record, is that the undisputed facts here showed there was no notice. And by not providing notice under the legal construct...
That's a separate question from whether, if she had provided notice, she would have been entitled to this care.
Okay.
That's a different point. Here you're saying, well, the reason she didn't provide the notice was that she wasn't eligible. But you didn't say in the brief she wasn't eligible.
My recollection, and I could be incorrect, is that in the briefs we argued both that she did not provide the level of notice to the company and that she couldn't have provided that because she was not eligible under these set of circumstances because her parents did not have serious health conditions that triggered the FMLA with respect to her. If we're talking about eligibility, whether she meets the 1,250 hours elements of the FMLA, that's a side issue that we're not discussing, Your Honor. I would like to briefly address counsel's
table of citations. Let's see what you refer to in the way of, not that this is the world's biggest issue.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, while you're...
Yeah, don't appear on the pages.
Mr. Orr, is your position we can't reach retaliation because of notice?
The notice requirements is a prima facie element of both the interference and the retaliation claim. So the failure to provide appropriate notice does, in fact, cause both causes of action to fail. That's correct.
So we don't look at the circumstances of the day?
Well, if you wanted to, Your Honors, those circumstances would certainly show that Ms. Nicholson was terminated for performance reasons exclusively. But we would only need to get to that question if she could first make out the prima facie case for discrimination or retaliation, which in this circumstance the district court properly recognized.
You did not mention a prima facie case in your brief, and the only regulations you discuss are the notice regulations. So, oral argument is a little late to be springing, a technical issue involving all these regulations. Anyway, what about your opponent's argument that you know, 10% of the people in this company could comply with the with their performance plan, and yet the rest weren't let go. Just she was let go.
Well, Your Honor, there's a careful play with the facts involved here, and I think counsel's referring to what was Exhibit K to our summary judgment motion, and it's a spreadsheet of both the monthly sales requirements for every sales associate and what that sales associate's actual sales were. And there are numerous sales associates on that sheet who met their goals on a fairly regular basis or even exceeded them. There are other sales associates who some months they met them, some months they didn't. And then there were those like Donna Nicholson who in the 6 months that she was employed in 2009, she was required to make 13 net sales, and she made 3. That was far below what was the average for those individuals. If you take a look at those 44 or 47 individuals, you're not going to find that every single individual made their sales months every month. No. It's a troubled economy. Home sales are going down. We can see that. What you will see is that Donna Nicholson's sales performance was lower than many others. And those who were also having low sales were also put on performance plans. Ms. Nicholson was given additional time in recognition of her tenure with the company. Her sales requirements during the performance period were actually dropped from 5 that was stated on her goal to 4 in her performance plan. So she was actually given a break to try and make these plans. It's also a misdescription to say she went from being an excellent employee to a terrible performer in a 3-month span. She was placed on a performance plan in 2007. She failed to meet her annual sales goals in 2008, and throughout the first half of 2009, it was consistently brought to her attention, Your Honors. You need to work on your attitude. You need to be making monthly sales goals. There was a concern brought up with customer complaints about her being rude and their specific decision that they were not going to buy a Capulti home specifically because of Ms. Nicholson. So it is not accurate in line with the evidence to say that this was suddenly about-face where Mr. Natz, who, by the way, had no notice whatsoever or no knowledge, and there's no evidence that he had any knowledge of these parents' health conditions, to suddenly decide he wanted to get rid of Ms. Nicholson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Caffarelli, have anything further?
If I could, just a minute, Your Honor. I believe that Mr. Ward, counsel, is trying to turn the FMLA regulations on their head. What they're trying to do is shift the burden from the company to the employee to identify when FMLA leave is appropriate. And there is a long line of cases from the circuit indicating that the burden is on the company, in addition to the federal regulations that were cited in our brief, saying that employee doesn't have to mention FMLA or say FMLA. As long as an employee describes their situation, and this situation could potentially be covered under the FMLA, then the burden shifts to the employer to say, okay, there's this thing called the FMLA, and if you'd like to apply for it, here's the paperwork, here's what you do. And then it's up to the employee whether to apply for it or not. But there are two issues here. There's that issue, but then there's the issue of, as Your Honor noticed previously, Donna Nicholson was allowed to take her leave, but she was immediately, there's a double temporal proximity here. She wanted to go to the doctor twice in 2009. The first time was when she took her father in April. She asks for the day off to take her father in April, and the next day she's put on a performance improvement plan out of the blue. And at that point, she's actually doing quite well. And then when she's terminated prematurely on her PIP, she takes her mother to the hospital. She asks to go back to the hospital, and her supervisor comes back to the office and terminates her on the spot. And these are the types of things that constitute interference. Interference isn't just not allowing the person to take time. Interference is terminating that person because they took the time or not allowing the person to return to their previous position. Donna Nicholson if I could conclude with anything, is not a mole. She's a hardworking employee. She had two parents that were dealing with very serious medical issues. Her father had stage 3 cancer.
We know.
Well, and these are exactly the types of employees that the FMLA was designed to protect. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much to both counsel.